Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
And here he comes. Uh-oh. Listen to the crowd. They're giving the football to Perry. Touchdown. Graham Perry spikes the football. And this crowd loves it. They will write songs about William Perry.
The stage is colorfully set for the NFL's top two companies, the Chicago Bears and the New England Patriots.
Jim McMahon brings the Bear offense on the field. Hilgenberg is the center. Thayer and Bortz at guard, and Van Horn and Covert the tackles. Moorhead, one of the tight ends in motion. Perry will drive through, and following behind is McMahon for the touchdown.
And there you see McMahon headbutting with his offensive line.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
It is the McNeil and Parkin Show at the Broad Stop for the inaugural Broad Bowl presented by Kenosha Subaru. Give Jay Hilgenberg a round of applause, everybody. This is a legendary Chicago Bear who's on the stage. This hour on The Score brought to you by Honda CRV. Search ContinentalHonda.com for the continental difference. What's up, Hilgi?
Not a whole lot. A little cold out, Bear Packer week. That'll warm everybody up, though.
It's not cold out at all, man. I should have brought
that. Tom Zach calling me right now.
You got Mike Tomczak calling you. You want to put him on the show?
My phone's over there. I can't get to him.
Oh, okay. That's too bad.
I'll talk to him later.
He's coaching at what, Youngstown these days?
Yeah. Youngstown State. Yeah, Youngstown, the Penguins.
I think they're one-double-A Penguins,
yes,
right?
Yes,
good for him.
Definitely. How are you doing?
I am.
How are you guys doing? I listen to you guys all the time. You guys are great.
You're the one.
Nah, you guys are great.
Oh, thanks. I know. I'm just kidding. I'm very humble.
We have fun. This father and son thing has been, it's been unique. It's
right.
been fun.
Yep.
He keeps me on my toes quite a bit.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, Danny, I haven't met Danny before till right now. We're talking about my daughter, Mara, is pregnant. It's going to due February. And
my wife is due in March.
In March. It's crazy. I mean, it's like Danny's my child's age.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's how Mac feels.
I do. And exactly. I remember when Mara was with you, we went to a Blackhawks game.
Right,
and she
absolutely.
Was about 3 feet above
right.
the ground
right.
sitting in the scoring screen.
Yeah, and that was tricky taking her to when she had to go to the bathroom at a Blackhawks game. That was tricky in the old stadium.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, I would imagine it would. You have any advice for me as I get ready to become a father?
Enjoy it. It goes fast. It's great. It really is. Just, be there when asked.
Be there when asked. Okay. Yeah. I can do that.
I probably didn't do a good job of that.
Well,
so
I'll be there.
I'll be
around.
I know you will.
He'll get hit with a shoe if he's not around as much as she needs him to be at some point.
Yeah.
At some point.
Times have changed, I think, too. The expectation is I will be there
no,
all
it,
the
it's
time.
It's great. There's nothing better. I mean, being in the room to deliver, but hey, that's all special days.
Yeah, I'm still wrapping my head around it. The idea of, it's not all about me anymore. I'm going to get a little less selfish. I'm told I'm going to get less sleep. I don't know, but I'm assuming I'm not going to get my 8 hours necessarily
probably,
every night.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Well, I could probably
just take your son over to Shep's house. He's lactating.
Yeah, how you doing with it, Shep, by the way? Shep's daughter was here again today, just sleeping.
Yes, yeah. I heard,
very,
yeah.
very That's peacefully. So, yeah,
Let's get into this Bears-Packers thing.
Right.
I want to start you with when you played the game, one of my favorite memories of Bears-Packers at Lambeau Field, the Mikowski over the line game in 89, and you had a ton of dates against Green Bay, so I know this rivalry. And you grew up with the division rivalry with Uncle Wally being a Viking.
Yeah, right. We lived this division, no doubt about it. Yeah, the Magic game, when he was over the line it was. I can't remember much of the game other really than that play. Was that the game that
you guys lost?
Yeah, I know we lost that game because I know Dick had put an asterisk in the play or the yearbook the next year.
Did
under
he?
That. Oh yeah, that game was marked. So, frustrating loss. Typical Bear Packer. Just no matter what their records are, it's going to be a fist fight out there. You know, we played some other games. I remember we played a Thursday night game up there one time, and the nose guard, I can't remember his name right now, he sang the national anthem before the game. And Dick Stanfield.
Jerry Ball?
No. Jerry Ball played with the Lions, the Packers. He's a Hawaiian player, Hawaiian of heritage, and did an unbelievable job singing the national anthem. And I always stood right next to Dick Stanfield, the offensive line coach, during the national anthem. As soon as it got done, he looks over at me and goes, "Make sure that's all he's known for tonight."
Nice.
I go, "No problem, coach."
You on your list of sports regrets, you told me once you should have gotten on the mat with Dan Gable, the great.
Right.
You ever
that's
wonder,
a good memory.
Well, it's, you know, I remember things. I'm recording my whole life for future playback. I wondered if you ever wished you'd played with the Packers to experience that.
No. I never had. I was happy. You know, I came in as a college free agent, so I was happy I was playing with anybody. You know, as soon as I made the Bears, but really, I did want to experience another team, so I wasn't totally upset that I was traded to the Cleveland Browns. I mean, the way my career was working out and was going, I mean, I would have been more content and happy to be a Bear for life. But it was nice to experience, you know, the other sides of the NFL. And, you know, what an experience to go to Cleveland and play for Bill Belichick there. And then my last year in the league, I was down in New Orleans and played with my brother. So, I think I did pretty good.
Which ex-Bear looked to you to be the most out of place in a Green Bay uniform? Because several of your former teammates...
I never played with Green Bay.
Oh, I know. Which of your teammates here? McMahon wore the Packers uniform.
Right, McMahon.
Mondo
wore
the Packers.
T-Zack, I was thinking about. I tried to call Tom Zack on the way up here to ask about something about Green Bay. That's why he called me back. I think it was probably... It's McMichael and McMahon. I mean, those two. But Steve McMichael, he has the best line about it. He always says, you know, Bear fans shouldn't be mad at him for going and playing for the Packers because he wasn't any good. He was stealing money from the Packers.
Yes.
That's not
how,
bad.
That's how he justified it.
I didn't realize you played for Belichick in Cleveland.
Yeah.
What was he like then?
He ran the offense. He ran the meeting. It was totally, he didn't let his assistant coaches coach at all. It was just him putting in plays. We probably ran about 8 to 10 plays a game, and it was like he had a viewfinder, and he'd have the game tape going on a screen, and then he'd put the viewfinder over the top of it, and he says, "All right, this is the way we're going to run our pass routes," and he'd design the pass route to the way the defense was playing their coverages, and it was brilliant, and we had, you know, the two plays called, everything, but we weren't smart enough to be able to do it. We couldn't accomplish what his vision was.
It feels ridiculous to say, like, could you have ever imagined him becoming this? But people talk about his time in Cleveland,
right,
like that he was a failure. Did you consider him a good coach at the time?
Absolutely. I thought he was excellent. He was disciplined. When we ran inside drills, 9-on-7. Drills, run game, and if we didn't do them right, we'd start over and do it correctly. And he was really good. He would ask questions. He would ask advice. He'd come and ask advice from me on stuff. And actually, he asked when he fired his offensive line coach. He asked for a recommendation for the new old line coach. I recommended Kirk Ferentz to him, and he hired him.
What's your tie to him?
He's a University of Iowa. He came offensive line coach at University of Iowa.
Herky Hawkeye.
Yeah, it was my rookie year. I left, but my younger brother Joel was at Iowa, so he coached my younger brother Joel. So yeah, the Ferentzes are really good friends of our family, and they're great. They've done a great job. They're Kirk's sons have been unbelievable players at Iowa, and the one's a starting center right now for the Patriots.
Yep.
James Ferentz.
We've been talking about some of the ways Matt Nagy has grown as a coach. What has he done since the season began up until this point that you've liked? What's he done that's shown you some growth as a play caller or as the CEO?
You know, I never really, you know, I look at when they talk about play caller, I always look at things through the eyes as a player. And I never really question the plays called. I mean, I always believe, I'm a big believer as a player every play, you know, you sit there from Wednesday to Friday looking at the plays and going over meetings. They're all drawn up. They're all drawn up to succeed against any defense. So I never question the plays. I mean, if plays don't work, it's player execution. That's the way I look at it. I think the thing Nagy has done the best, though, is this year is to keep this team together. He's kept this ship going. I mean, they were down. They this thing could be in the bottom of the ocean right now. But he's kept them afloat, and I think he's done a nice job of that. And battled back to 7-6. Here we are in December, and it's a meaningful game still. And if they, you know, beat the Packers, last game of the year, Kansas City is, you know, it's going to be a huge game. It'll be great.
So we're talking to Jay Hilgenberg here at the Brat Stop. Is there any exception to that? So, like, I'm thinking Mitch is hurt. David Montgomery's got a bum ankle. They run an option to the short side of the field.
Right, all right.
Or just play selection in terms of balance. The game against the Saints, Matt Nagy calls 7 run plays.
Isolating on Adam Shaheen in the red zone.
Yeah, and even after the 7 run play game, there were reports and guys talked about it that he kind of apologized for not running the ball more. So at some point, some of it's on the coach, or it's all play. They should have executed the 51 pass plays.
I mean, in the NFL, nothing's 100%. There's always a side argument. So yeah, I mean, there's a little bit each way. But I think the biggest mistake they've made is not playing these guys in the preseason. I think it was such a huge leap to take. You have a rookie running back. You're not going to play him. You basically have in James Daniels playing center, who's never played center in the NFL before. Not getting the reps in the preseason. So I just think this team would have been better off with more reps in the preseason.
Would you expect him to change that next year?
That's going to be interesting to see. You know, it's just it's interesting to watch coaches and their philosophy, how long they stick with their system. You know, it all kind of goes with how strong they feel in their contract. You know, are they going to change? And I think he'll probably stick with the same thing, but I think they need to play. I don't see any reason. I know the reason is they don't want to get him hurt, but to me, that's not a good reason.
Yeah, if I had to bet right now, I'd say that he does it the same.
Yeah, no, the coaches are stubborn. They are. I mean, he has to do it the same, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't see it as a sign of weakness if he changed it up. But I think it's
just
reasonable.
Know what offense you're going to run in week one.
That would be helpful.
When you're in training camp in August, that would be a good thing.
I you know, if they would have played, you know, the first half of 3 preseason games, they would have been better in that Packers game. I mean, they needed one touchdown.
The offensive line in particular, because you don't get to maul each other in practice anymore.
Right, and you know, James Daniels, he played one series, didn't he, at center in the preseason. I mean, and he never played center in the NFL before. And it's tough to learn on the job like that. And during the week, you don't hit. So,
what have you made about the switch, now that they switched it back and it's Whitehair at center?
You know, it's probably with Coward going in at right guard. It's probably a good shift. You know, I they say it's for the, you know, calling out the signals and communication. And I'm not a big believer of the center being the only guy out there that can communicate. I was always a big believer of our offensive line. I mean, if anybody sees anything, you call it out. I mean,
why has it always been on the center? Because you're right. It's usually the center is the only one that does it.
I don't know. It's just the way the NFL is. That's one of those funny
best
things.
Look at the defense, because you're right in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what it is. You're in the middle. The tackles are off on the side and stuff. But, I remember Dick said, I could care less when I came at Iowa. You play college ball, you know, back in the day, it's a lot different now, a lot more complex. But it was just, you know, 24 lead, and, you know, who cares where the strength is. I remember Dick Stanfield. I go, Dick, I don't care where the tight end lines up. And he goes, yeah, you may not, but your tackle probably does.
Yeah, when you say it's like a lot more complex now, were you being literal when you said that with Belichick you guys ran 8 or 10 plays?
Literally, I mean,
8 or 10 plays,
you know,
in one game?
Well, see, I was traded the week of the regular season. So I never saw a playbook in Cleveland ever. I saw the game plan, and we had.
Let's say, what about with the Bears?
Like, how many 10 or 12.
How many plays are in the game plan back in the day for a Bears game?
Oh, I mean, a lot of plays. Well, they'd say you got like 60 plays, something like that. But really, they're like 12 plays that run differently. all over. So it's kind of the same concept. So you have three or four different concepts that you're going to run.
Jay Hilgenberg is going to hang out with us for another segment. This segment brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Leroy Butler with us at 4:30. Eddie Jackson at 5. It's McNeil and Parkins on the score.
From 52 yards. He can get it there. Good. Kevin Butler with hits to the head and hugs from everybody. For John Madden, this is Pat Summerall saying so long from Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where the final score was the Bears 26, the Packers 24.
1987, Bears Packers, Lambeau Field.
The butthead getting it done as he so often did.
Jay Hilgenberg with us here. McNeil and Parkins on the score.
52-yarder, huh?
I think it was 52, yeah.
Yep.
That was great. We scored 26. I mean, we overcame 24 points and scored 26 to win. We had an offense back there in the 80s.
Yeah, or something like that.
Well, even though the 30 for 30 just showed the defense pretty
much. Right, exactly. That's my point.
Not that any of the guys on the offense are bitter about it after all.
Not at
all.
Not at all. We only had a number one offense in the league.
You had the ball the whole game because your defense was constantly putting them three
right,
and out.
Right, right. We carried those guys so much. You know, if you look at, I have the original end zone film of the Super Bowl because that was the last game they ever did by film in the NFL. They went to videotape after that. So it's, they always have a reel, the first half and second half on reels. So you have two reels. And there is so much film on those reels, it falls off. I mean, it shows you how many plays we had in the Super Bowl. And you look at the defensive end zone of that. I mean, there's like one reel with like, it's like half full. I mean, it's just, we dominated the time of possession back then.
Bears.
So the Bears have an offense. We just got to believe.
You think this team's got an offense?
Absolutely they do. I'm big on Mitch. I've been big on Mitch from the very beginning. It's what I'm hearing everybody say now. I've been saying from day one, you got to run Mitch. Just get him out there, let him compete, let things happen. I said it on the post game one time. I thought the move with Cody Whitehair going at center may be a good one because those bad snaps every now and then make Mitch, react differently, just take off the ball and ad lib and go.
He is a different player when he's running with the football. He's more engaged, it seems.
Yes, yeah. I think it gets everybody excited. It's fun for an offensive line, actually, to have a quarterback out there running around competing and making plays like that.
Give me a good Jim McMahon story.
Oh, man.
That you could tell on
yeah,
the air.
Or not. I mean, you got a dump button.
I don't know.
It might involve a dump.
Jim was just a tough player, just a competitor. I remember at times on the practice field, it was his whole thing was keep football simple. The KISS offense, keep it simple, stupid.
I could see that.
And his whole thing was don't make it so complicated. If you see two safeties in the back, they're playing zone. If you see one, it's man, and that's all you have to do. And just the thing about McMahon is just the way he competed on the field. I mean, he went all out. That 1984, we played the Raiders. It was like I saw it somewhere online. It was the most violent game of all time. And he scrambled up the middle, and he was hit from behind, and he lacerated his kidney.
Yep.
In that, and he didn't come out of the game. The only reason he came out of the game, he was in so much pain. He couldn't yell the signals loud enough out there where he couldn't hear him. So he had to come out and if he would have stayed healthy, that was the thing.
The legend had it in that Raiders game, Ray Guy was their emergency quarterback, and after the second guy got knocked a little bit silly, I can't remember who the hell it was.
Right.
Mark Wilson. I think it was Mark Wilson. He's a little bit loopy. Ray Guy was hiding on the Raiders. Right,
absolutely.
He wanted nothing to do with that group.
You know, they had to delay the game and I think bring Mark Wilson out of being x-rayed. They delayed the game for a couple minutes to bring him out and keep playing.
Keep it simple, stupid is working in the NFL this year. People talk about these high-tech offenses, and yeah, they're fun to watch, but it's also fun to watch San Francisco and certainly the Ravens last night. Man, that's a thing, right?
You know, I think those two teams, the 49ers and the Ravens, play with more energy on offense than I've seen any teams play. I mean, those running backs are flying through that line of scrimmage. They play at high speed. And I just, you know, I just think what the Ravens are doing offensively, the NFL is a copycat league. And, I mean, I look at the Ravens are going to be tough to beat from here on out.
I don't see anybody
no,
getting
No, I don't either. I just, it's not going to happen. You know, it's almost the reverse of the Bears in 85 with the 46 defense that no one knew how to defend. It's almost the reverse of what the Ravens are doing offensively against every defense in the NFL right now. They don't know how to defend this offense. So I could see them going and winning it. But it takes a John Harbaugh-type coach to make this drastic change, a guy that's not married to a system. You know, he's a special teams coach. He can go and analyze his athletes and see what's best for them, and this is it.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is what kind of slowed the development of this season with Nagy, because he is married to a system.
Right.
Yeah, he
yes.
firmly believes right. in his system.
Right.
The West Coast spread hybrid, a quarterback who gets the ball out quick, pass before run, pass is better than run because there's a higher ceiling
yes.
for it. Like, he firmly believes in that.
So here's the $64,000 question now. If he continues to let Trubisky be Trubisky, and these last three games we see more of what we've seen, does he afford his quarterback to enjoy that same type of simple, stupid approach next year, or does he spend the entire offseason trying to take it to that next level that he is so desirous of?
Yeah, I just, you know, you can keep tweaking things so much where you mess them up. But, hey, being an ex-player, you know, that's the way I look at it. I just keep things basic, simple, and it's the fundamentals. It's the fundamentals of technique, of run blocking, of running pass routes. That's what it really comes down to. Again, I mean, the actual plays, I don't care what they are. If you have proper fundamentals and techniques, and if you're bigger and stronger, the guys you're playing against, you're going to beat them.
I've heard debate these last couple days about which team has the better roster, Bears or Packers. I think the Bears, if you take out the quarterback position, have a better roster. But I'd love to have both of Green Bay's tackles. And
right.
I would think that would be high on your offseason wish list for the Bears, a new tackle, either left or right for the Bears.
Yeah, I think there's you got to have competition big time for the Bears offense this year. No question about it. It has to be like a little different offseason for these guys. You know, I listen to your station all the time, and you know, a lot of the talk is that the offseason was so pleasant for these guys this past year. And I agree that there's probably a little bit of truth to that. That, you know, that playoff, they didn't really feel the sting of that playoff loss, I guess.
Yeah.
It was all on the kicker.
It was all on the kicker. And I will admit to it, there was assumed growth. Like, I assumed that the longer the coach and quarterback were together and that Mitch was in the system, that he would take a leap in terms of his comfort.
Right.
And it didn't.
Right, it's not on Mitch, though. Again, you know, the tight end position, that's a disaster, you know, right going on.
Yes. What sure is on been. Mitch? I almost feel like we've swung a little bit now. Like, everyone was crushing Mitch so much, and right. now exactly. it's back. And now it's like, well, exactly. I mean, it's Daniels and Whitehair and Burton and Shaheen and Nagy. Like, is any of it on Trubisky?
Hey, it's because we're Bear fans, you know.
So nothing's on the right. quarterback anymore?
Mitch has had a couple good games, so he's great.
What happened to Bears fans who like to bitch about their quarterback?
Yeah,
what happened?
Right.
So, here Monday at 2.
All I'm saying is some of it has to be on him. Like,
absolutely.
Okay.
No question. It is, but again, I mean, I would like to see these guys get the reps in the preseason.
I know.
Because where else do they get it? They don't get it during the week of
practice. The Rams went to the Super Bowl last year and started 8-0 without playing anybody in the
right.
preseason, right? Like, so I think that there's data points on both sides
of this thing. There is. That's the NFL. There's one argument against another all day long.
Exactly.
To me, the positions, though, where you have to have the most contact, you have to have some live reps. You can't spend the entire month of August sitting on your helmet or your hat in training camp. You've got to beat each other up a little bit. You don't have time to do it during the season.
To come out and what did they score? What did they score that first game of the Packers? 3 points?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So that's
yeah, that was a terrible game. And doesn't that game now feel like it was last year's opener?
Yeah, it feels like a different...
May as well have been.
Right.
Right, it could have been the second half of last year's opener.
We should talk about that game and make those guys, you know, feel a little sting about that. You know, so hopefully they watch that game this week.
What do you make of when they come out this week? We're talking to Jay Hilgenberg here, and Bottom of the Hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Purdue. Season and single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at NUSports.com. We'll talk to Eddie Jackson about this coming up at 5 o'clock, but multiple players have come out, including Mitch, and have admitted, hey, we pressed. We pressed early in the season, which is another word for choke. But what do you do with that? Like, do you buy that was a part of the problem, that they just were too hyped up about their expectations?
No, I don't at all, because, I mean, your expectations should be high every week and every year going in. I mean, your expectations should be, you know, playoffs, Super Bowl. I mean, to be the best player you can be. I mean, you should have pressure, high expectations on yourself.
When they say it, what do you think as a player?
I don't know. I think it's kind of just a throwaway line by the guy.
Guy searching for words.
Yeah, I don't think he's serious or knows what you're talking about. I really don't get it that you pressed. You know, it's about football. You know, to me it was, you know, I wanted to excel at football. I didn't have plan B. I didn't want to go back and go to college. And
you didn't know what else you would do.
Right. I mean, I'm sure I would have gone into coaching and have a happy life and everything like that. But at 22 years of age, being a college free agent at the Bears camp, I mean, I was going to do whatever it took to make that team every day.
His arms were too short,
and so, I mean, I was pressing every day. So I was pressing my, you know, and you talked to, like, Tom Thayer and some of our other linemen, we pressed every day out there. I don't know. Maybe there should be more pressure on these guys.
Well, I mean, apparently not. They didn't think they could handle it.
Yeah, but I suppose that's, you know, today's, you know, I suppose that's not, it's a different style today.
So how tough was it for you to be a college free agent? No drafting, no guaranteed roster spot, no guaranteed contract. What were the biggest hurdles?
To get noticed. I suppose getting noticed wasn't the problem, because, I mean, my uncle played 16 years in the NFL, and he played for the Minnesota Vikings, and Jim Finks was the GM. So the Bears, Jim Finks knew who I was, so I came in. It was just, I think, every day going out there and feeling like it was either, if you had a good practice, you were going to make the team, or a bad practice, you were going to get cut. I mean, as a rookie year. And then actually a guy ended up getting hurt his knee, Paul Tabor. He was a 1980 second round draft choice from Oklahoma, and hurt his knee. And right then, I mean, Dick Stanfield started coaching me. I mean, right then, and I was going to make the team. And I remember it was the last preseason game. I hadn't even played in any preseason games. It was the last preseason game, and I was a long snapper. And Jim Finks walking down the hall, and I wanted to let Jim Finks know I'm more than a long snapper. I go, Jim, I can play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went up to Mr. Finks, you know, I can play football. And he looked at me, he was smoking a cigarette, took a big drag off it, and blew it out, and he goes, just snap the ball, will you?
That's fair.
I go, yes, sir, I can do that.
You dig it. You know, Finks might be the most unheralded part of the 85 Bears.
I agree.
Draft an offensive lineman, defensive lineman in the first rounds, and hitting home runs with a bunch of those guys.
Yeah, definitely. You know, getting Keith Van Horn and Jimbo Covert. I mean, these guys, I mean, to get those guys was big. I mean, Jim Finks was a great GM. I mean, he was a good person.
Jay, tell us a story about a young John Yurkovich wearing yellow pants and a Packers jersey. And he had the Black and Blues Brothers poster on his wall growing up in Calumet City. And he's lining up against a perennial Pro Bowl center, Jay Hilgenberg, and his best friend, Tom Thayer.
I remember it. Green Bay, back in the day, they weren't the strongest teams, the Packers teams. And they had a nose guard, Blaze Winter, and he was a hard. He was a hard-nosed player. He wasn't the most athletic player, though, I'd have to say. He wasn't the best top-line-tiered nose guard in the NFL out there playing. And we didn't want to have Blaze ever get hurt. So we were sitting there, you know, blocking, and all of a sudden he gets hurt and he goes out. And so Tom and I are in the huddle. We go, all right, who's going to come in next? You know, coming in, and we're sitting there. All of a sudden, you see this little chubby guy come running in the field, like just scooting his feet, and he was like putting his belt on. He's shuffling his feet and putting his belt on. And he looks at us in the huddle, and we're sitting there just laughing at him. And he sees us laughing at him. And then years later, when you guys were doing stuff at Radio at training camp, he was interviewing Tom and I, and Yurko goes, I saw you guys laughing at me when I ran on that field.
That checks out.
And I tell you,
I can picture him waddling out there with his pants falling down.
It was funny. But he ended up being a solid NFL player at that nose position.
Yeah, he was decent. Survived 10 years in that league.
He did a great job. It's a great job.
Jay, thank you for coming to the Brat Stop in person.
Thank you.
We really appreciated it.
Thank you. Well, hey, you got to head down the road a mile, Strawberry Creek, and we'll play a little golf next year.
I would think now is probably not a good time. Jay Hilgenberg, ladies and gentlemen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.